Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yes,
oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, January 18th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's casual Friday. You know what that means, ladies and gentlemen. Cliff Schecter will be here to discuss the week that was. Also on the program today, making her first appearance in 2013 on the Majority Report, the wonderful Isabel Gillies, to give me a movie recommendation. I don't know, maybe not just a movie recommendation. What I really need is ideas on what to call my son when he's born. Like specifically a name is what I'm looking for. Also on the program today, Shell, their drilling in the Arctic may be in jeopardy because they put the Arctic in jeopardy. Alabamans get ready to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade by harassing women. In Algeria, another attempted rescue, or a continuation of rescue efforts of several hundred hostages. We will get to that later in the program. Also, wonderful update about David Brooks teaching his humility class at Yale. And we'll get to that Bachman story just because we have to. Glenn Beck also, his business model revealed by Glenn Beck. But first, before we go to Cliff Schecter, who is, as you undoubtedly know, will be talking about the gun control executive action signed by President Obama this week and the resultant right-wing's cries of I don't know, inappropriateness, or I'm not exactly sure what they're whining about now, but some of them aren't whining at all. Some of them are basically teaching us all a lesson about guns. Republican Assemblyman Tim Donnelly, this guy's, I guess, in California, had this to say about what God wants vis-a-vis guns. For those of you who may be atheists, you probably aren't aware of the theological reasons for Americans to carry guns. You're about to be educated. Here is that clip of Republican Assembly Tim Donnelly on a Christian Talks show. This is via Raw Story Gun.
You know, guns are used an average of 3 million times a year, according to the Clinton Justice Department. That's like 6,900 times a day. That's the high end of the statistics. Other people say it's only 200 times a day. Whatever that number is, they are used to defend human life. They are used to defend our property and our families and our faith and our freedom, and they're absolutely essential to living the way God intended for us to live.
Amen for that, Tim, and thank you for ending with that nice benediction.
Yeah. There you go. That is the nice benediction. God intended us. Now, he was saying this after President Obama's gun violence prevention proposals, but he was, you know, you could only find the Clinton Justice Department figures. But I would imagine they're being used far more in service of the Almighty. Blessed be he. Amen. I think we can all say to that. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter in just a moment. We are back, ladies and gentlemen, on the phone, Cliff Schechter. But before we hear from Cliff Schechter, first, let's hear Cliff Schechter's theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Libertas LLC.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I know many of you will be singing that song again in the shower tomorrow, as many of you do following Fridays. It's always a pleasure. Cliff, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm just concerned about anybody singing that song in the shower, as I think I should be.
Well, you got to take it. You got to take it where you can get it, buddy.
That's a great point. That is a great point. And as I'm usually sort of, you know, the schlub that you have on Friday, you know, right before the actual famous person.
Well, no, I mean,
before someone, the fact that even one or two people might be singing my song, I suppose, is something I should be pretty excited about.
Yeah, but. I mean, yeah, exactly. That's a tribute to you that people take into their regime of personal hygiene. That's nothing to be scoffed at. For a schlub, that's pretty good.
I am not scoffing. I just was saying I'm concerned about people because I don't want, you know, it to becoming sort of this earworm that drives them to madness.
No, we've had many emails to that effect. So,
I mean, that's how good a song it is. That's Jimmy Reefercake's fault for putting together such a sexy ballad there.
There you go. All right, so quite a week in an issue that I know you've been working on for several years, which is some type of reasonable gun control in this country. I want to start with a video that has been put out by it's interesting because we're now seeing sort of this issue no longer being one that is being skirted, but is actually now, I think, like a lot of issues over the past couple of years that were where liberals were on their heels about, is now sort of people are leaning forward a little more into this. This is an ad that was put out by Stop Gun Violence. We should say this, you know, this has been quite a week for ads by different entities fighting out this battle here. But this one is from Stop Gun Violence, and it is aimed at John Barrow, a Democratic congressman from Georgia's 12th district It
Although
is,
you may want to put Democratic in quotes, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what he runs on. He's one of those old sort of Dixiecrat. Well, I don't know about Dixiecrat is the proper term, but he's a blue
Democrat?
Dog. Perhaps
Sorry, I didn't
that
say that. I never said that.
All right, so let's hear this ad.
I'm John Barrow.
Breaking news now.
There's been a shooting at a school.
And long before I was born.
20 children.
Children. Children targeted.
My grandfather used this little Smith & Wesson here.
Beautiful little kids between the ages of 5 and 10 years old.
And for as long as I can remember, my father always had this rifle real handy.
Someone shooting in the building.
He came in, we are told, with at least 3 weapons.
Multiple weapons. And begins a massacre.
This is so horrible.
And that's why I'm proud to be endorsed by the NRA.
Our founding fathers understood that the guys with the guns make the rules.
I approve this message because these are my guns now. And ain't nobody gonna take them away.
Catherine Hubbard, 6 years old.
7-year-old Anna Marquez Green.
Chase Kowalski, 7 years old. Mary Sherlock.
Justin that's Lewis. An incredibly powerful ad. I mean, I had I just seen that Barrow ad in and of itself. I mean, what it does is it intersperses, obviously, footage from the wake of different gun tragedies that have taken place in this country with Barrow sort of very in a very macho fashion, holding up his guns, cocking them. I think if I had seen that Barrow ad in and of itself, it would have been enough to sort of push me over the edge. But what's going on here with this ad?
Well, what you've got is you've got a guy who put on, and a Democrat. Ironically, probably I'd say he had one of the 3 or 4 most offensive ads, I would call it, the last election cycle. And I remember it. From when it came out in its entirety. You know, you may remember Joe Manchin had an ad too where he had a rifle and was shooting the EPA, the potential bill to have
cap and trade.
But Manchin at least has come out to whatever credit we can give him and so far has said he's open to some of the things President Obama's talking about. John Barrow put out that ad. And again, let's be clear about John Barrow's ad. He's not just being a macho gun guy. He is playing into the far-right militia anti-government culture. Here is a congressman, a member of the government, who's saying, ain't nobody going to take these guns away, as if somebody is coming to his house, implying that the federal government is coming in somehow, and he is the federal government, so I suppose is that him walking into his own house? I'm not sure. But it's the federal government coming in and taking away what he shows in the commercial, which are a handgun and a rifle, which, A, no one's talking about taking those away from law-abiding citizens. So the whole thing is based on a farce, and it's based on he's basically trucking in anti-government extremism. So you start off with that, and then you add to that the fact that as soon as President Obama made his proposal the other day, he came out and he called the proposal divisive and said that no measures to pass gun laws would do anything about this because, he's smarter than people at, let's say, the University of Pennsylvania School of Epidemiology and Emory School of Medicine and places that have actually done studies on this. But John Barrow in his own brilliant head has figured out he knows more than them. So, to be clear, I'm not involved with this. I've sent it around to the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. Put this together. They're the ones who, about a week and a half ago, put out ads up in North Dakota and in Washington, D.C., when Heidi Heitkamp came out and said that President Obama's the newly elected senator from North Dakota, a Democrat, that President Obama's ideas sounded extreme. And they slammed her for it and told her the same thing they said to John Barry here, which is shame on you, and shamed her. And she actually backed off a little bit of her stance. Barrow is a guy that has an A-plus rating from the NRA. He's taken the most money of any Democrat in the House from the NRA, and he won't switch his vote. But he's in a heavily Republican district. He basically votes for Republicans most of the time anyhow, is rarely with us on anything. Any of the issues you and I discuss on this show, I promise you, from Social Security to Medicare to guns to abortion rights to gay rights, he's on the other side. And so I think, it's people on our side making a decision. which is there's not going to be any accountability. You know, Ladd Everett, the spokesman for the group, went on Rachel Maddow's show a week ago after the Heidi Heitkamp ads and said the era of no accountability for Democrats on this issue is over, and I feel exactly the same way, which is, you know, the conservatives have their Tea Party. Granted, I think a Tea Party is crazy and what they stand for is nuts, but they make demands that they primary people. Well, and those of us on the left who've watched people, you know, who call themselves Democrats try to sell out Social Security, try to sell out, have consistently sold out on gun violence, selling out on choice with the Stupak Amendment and things like that, need to know that we're going to come and we're going to make them eat those remarks. And we're going to remind people when they put on extreme anti-government ads. And so I'm proud of CSGV for doing this, very proud of them, and happy to show that ad to anybody who's willing to watch it. And, well, a lot of people apparently have watched it, considering that I've seen it at Talking Points Memo and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and Business Insider and a bunch of other major places, Crooks and Liars and America Blog and others. So, and now on exclusively on the Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where traffic will go through the roof after that. So,
indeed, and we've got that posted up at majority.fm. I hope YouTube servers can handle it.
Seriously, though, and this is important. This is important because, again, I think this sets a marker on this issue, but I think it sets a marker on other issues. You know, most of these blue dogs have lost either to more progressive Democrats. We've gotten a few of those cases. We had two or three of those cases last in 2012 where progressive Democrats in the House took on blue dogs. I think of Joe Baca. I think of Holden from Pennsylvania and others and beat them and ended up winning their elections. But, you know, at some point you need to show that if you're someone like John Barrow and you literally are going to repeat all the other side's talking points, help push their goals, be terrible on issue after issue after issue, you know what? We don't need you any longer. I mean, and I'm not saying I want to get rid of Democrats, and I'm not saying that I don't understand nuance, which I do. There are people that will disagree with me on some issues, and in most cases I will accept that. But when you're someone who's really terrible on some core issues and really terrible on everything, then you know what? You need to hear about it. And right. I don't think sitting around and being scared, a Republican might win, that doesn't do us any good. Yeah. He needs to be reminded of these things. And if he doesn't change, then he may just lose his seat. And you know what? That's his problem.
And this is, you know, this is also, I think, a byproduct, particularly when we're talking about the House, of the fact that most people who watch this stuff think it's going to be very difficult for Democrats to take the House back over the next 8 years, 7 years or so, because of the redistricting. But maybe we'll get into that a little bit later. But I want to read these poll numbers from Reuters, because I think one has to understand what has happened in the country in the wake of Sandy Hook to also understand what President Obama and why President Obama did what he did this week. This is a poll from Reuters taken mostly before Obama released his recommendations. 74% of Americans favor a ban on assault weapons. 26% opposed. A ban on high-capacity ammunition clips was backed by 74%. 26% were opposed. 86% favored expanded background checks of all gun buyers, including sales at gun shows and between private parties, with 14% opposed. 14%. This is a big change on these numbers.
Oh, especially, you have to understand, the background checks has been pretty constant, because the thing because most people, it's one of those things where I think people were saying, you know, that some of the Republicans were getting the benefit of the doubt at a certain time. I remember reading this last election, because when they said they were going to cut people's Medicare, people literally just didn't believe them. I think Paul Ryan got some of that benefit. Do you remember reading some of those stories?
Yes, yes.
Well, you know, you've got a similar thing here, which is the background checks numbers remain high, because I don't think most people, when you talk to them, actually believe there already were background checks.
Right.
They literally couldn't believe that somebody who is a felon or a terrorist or running a drug cartel, or mentally insane, or or a serial domestic abuser, and you can go on, can walk into a parking lot somewhere, and out of the back trunk of someone's car, could literally just show their ID, and they would be legal at that point. All they have to show is a driver's license for them to get a 50 caliber rifle that can take down a helicopter, to get an assault weapon where you can walk into a school in Newtown and mow down 20 kids and 6 teachers and administrators. They just didn't believe it. So they've always been with us on that, I think, and I think the more and more we've explained this to people, they've even become more steadfast. The real change is on assault weapons. and on these clips. Just the fact, the magazines, the fact that, you know, these high-profile attacks, virtually all of them, there are exceptions. Obviously, the Trayvon Martin thing was high-profile, but what that led to were people starting to attack stand-your-ground laws, too. But in this particular case, from Aurora to Tucson to the Sikh temple in Wisconsin, to, you know, to what happened up in Portland, Oregon, to, I mean, you know, name any of the recent attacks, the one that people have mostly forgotten about now that took place in a workplace in Minnesota that happened this summer, Cafe Racer, the shooting in Seattle, and pretty much all of these, somebody was either firing a high-capacity magazine or firing an assault weapon. And so whereas literally, I would tell you 6 months ago, you either had a plurality of people in favor of banning assault weapons, it would be like 47 to 43 or 48 to 42, or at best you'd have it in the low 50s. Look where we are now. Look what happens when the other side fights back. Look what happens when the other side exposes the NRA for being the horrors of arms dealers that they are, and the enabler of extremists of all stripes. This is what happens, because when people get the right information and the other side, you know, is out there actually making their argument, and there have been some of us who've been making this argument for a long time, but there are a lot more now.
You know, what's fascinating to me about this from a politically observing the politics of this. And there's a certain consistency that we're seeing, at the very least, from the Obama administration on, and I perceive this this issue of guns to be a social issue, and that it is very much tied into the identity politics on the right. This notion of it being a culture, this notion again of, you know, I think there is no right-wing social issue that cannot be explained by the notion that someone's coming to get something from me. They're coming to take my guns. They're coming to take away traditional marriage. They're coming away to take my jobs. They're coming away to take my taxes. It's, you know, the right-wing mentality is always one that is under siege, and they create this sense that they're under siege as a way of activating their base. And whether it's the loss of traditional values or whatever it is, something's always under attack. They're coming to take our guns. They're coming to take our freedom. They're coming to take our liberty. They're coming to take our way of life, et cetera, et cetera. And,
yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. I thought you were done.
But it seems to me that President Obama, we've now seen him basically evolve when it comes to marriage equality, embrace that issue, support it, when the numbers got to be about 51% or more. We saw President Obama embrace choice, and people tend to forget that, you know, it was not that long ago, maybe 8 years ago, 2004, I think it was, where we heard the Democratic Party sort of attempting to make a shift in the same way they did in abandoning sensible gun control back, you know, in the early 2000s, where they were starting to say, like, we have to reach across and understand the sensitivities here. Well, that was thrown out the window in this last election, much to the benefit of the electoral prospects of President Obama. And I would peg that to the point where the Department of Health and Human Services put out that that fairly innocuous ruling about health insurance needing to provide birth control, frankly, and it basically the right took the bait. Santorum ran with this. It seriously hurt and forced Romney to move to the right, and we saw it with marriage equality, and now we're seeing it with guns. That the administration made the determination that we have reached a tipping point where if we come out now, we're going to push that needle even further, but it's beyond the tipping point now. And in some ways, it's working out, it would appear, in a similar fashion as to marriage equality and basically the argument that women have sovereignty over their own body.
Right. Well, you and I have discussed some of these issues for a long time, not just issues as in specific political issues, but communications and other things from the White House, and how that first term it often just seemed like they didn't want to fight, and especially if they thought they were going to lose. Our friend Digby wrote a great post about this the other day about the importance of having the fight, of making the argument. Even if you don't win, The right's understood that for years because they move the ball. You know, they move the chains. They move what is possible the next time around. They attack Social Security that first time and fail, but they're back again 5 years later, and that doesn't seem as crazy because it's been done before.
Right.
You know, and that was what was driving us, I think, crazy. Also, just the fact that you have this bully pulpit, you have a way to move numbers, you have a 13, 14 million member email list that trumps the NRA membership or the membership of the National Right to Life Committee or any other group like that, and you just want to be like, use it. You know, use the stuff you have to and your high approval rating. I mean, what more evidence do we need from this past election? I mean, besides the four gay marriage proposals going through, I mean, an open lesbian was elected from Wisconsin, which is a state that has a lot of rural areas, by the way. She wasn't elected from Massachusetts or New York. She was elected from Wisconsin, which, again, is a lean Democratic swing state. But still, you know, it's just I get so tired of the myths. You know what I mean? Of dealing with the myths, and that's what we've dealt with the NRA. And you break it all down in the end, you know, which you could by studies done by people like Paul Waldman, or you could just look at, you know, electoral results and, you know, on your own this time, and you would see they had a 0.83% return on investment, the worst of any group. Pretty much everybody who stood up to the NRA this past election lost. People that were too pro-gun were beaten in primaries by more progressive people. And this happened again on gay rights, and this happened on women's rights. We elected a whole crop of fantastic women. The entire delegation from New Hampshire now is women. Are women. I'm not speaking English.
I'll tell you, because, you know, it's interesting because the dynamic here, there was a – I don't want to overstate this. There was a fascinating exchange that I saw on Morning Joe today. And I want to be careful in the way that I characterize this in terms of fascinating. But S.E. Cup was on there. And
that's a bad start, right?
Well, and I don't know who was filling in, a British woman. I don't know if this was the sort of part of the Joe Scarborough tour of apology for being such a chauvinist the other day in some exchange. But S.E. Cup was making the argument that, look, you know, it's not right to demonize the NRA. This is out of bounds. And the British woman was saying that even though she has the perspective of, like, what's gone on in this country is just craziness in terms of guns, she doesn't think that it's right to make this a cultural issue either. And to me, What that tells me is that in some respects, the Obama administration, at least on these social issues, and this is, you know, we will talk about the fiscal issues in a moment, but at least on social issues, has now understood that, look, there is an immovable object.
They are
the
losing.
Right.
That's really what I'll let you continue, but that's what this proves.
Yes.
They're asking you to lay off them. They're losing. Go ahead.
They're losing. But that core group of people who have that culture, they are an immovable object, and there is no way of converting with them or negotiating with them. And not only is that the case, but they are also an object that is tied to the right in this country, that is tied to the Republican Party, and that is now dragging them down. So where in the past the Democrats on these social issues have tried to blur the lines and have had tried to sort of say, can we peel some of this off? They're now saying, no, what we should do is actually confront them, because they will retreat to higher ground, if it were, or they will ensconce themselves more, and they will actually become more of a dense and polarized group, one which will be basically more and more marginalized. And so, you know, when you see the right complain about these things, what it is that you're right. They're seeing that they're losing and that they have no way of winning in this situation, because the more that they are forced to behave like they are, you know, more that they are forced to come out and say, hey, rape is, you know, just it can't happen legitimately, blah, blah, blah. Or that, you know, the gay agenda, they're hypnotizing our children. They are pushing themselves further and further out of the mainstream, and they're diminishing their political influence, at least on a national stage.
Right. I mean, let's go through just a quick history on this, all right? So you can understand, put everything S.E. Cupp and whoever the other person was who was on the show is saying to put this all in perspective, all right? Probably starting, one would argue, maybe even earlier, but certainly with Richard Nixon, the Republican Party decided that they could win with the Southern strategy. And yeah, initially it was about racism. Initially it was about getting your white supporters all up in arms, no pun intended, against the Black Democratic Party, as they called it in the South, and Jesse Jackson and the rest of it. But it went on from there to other cultural issues: religion, guns, abortion rights. I mean, these were unifying issues for them. And a lot of these battles were fought out in the 70s, where extremists either started or took control of these groups. The NRA is a classic example. Well, the guy who took control of the NRA in 1977 and their big revolt when they threw out the establishment guys who just wanted to talk about hunting and safety and the rest was a guy named Harlan Carter, who, as it came out a couple of years later, had shot and killed a Hispanic youth and had been convicted of murder in the 1930s. And it had been overturned by a court on a technicality. The current president of the NRA, David Keene, a classic old white conservative, his son was arrested and went to prison for a road rage incident where he started shooting at people. Granted, that's his son, that's not him, and people say kids should be out of bounds, but he's fighting for the rights of people like his son to be able to get these guns to do things like this. And I'm sorry, the culture of his household probably had something to do with his thoughts on guns. So these are the people, these are the extremists. They don't want you to, they're like, don't demonize the NRA. This is the NRA. This is Wayne LaPierre, who calls the ATF jackbooted thugs and encourages people to shoot at them.
Right.
This is Wayne LaPierre, who called Bill Clinton a murderer and said Obama's going to take away all of our freedoms and said he's coming to take your guns. I mean, we've been through all this on your show before, so we don't have to go through it. They've turned themselves into demons. They just released that ad that everybody's seen going after President Obama's kids. So first of all, these groups obviously are so far to the right, so far in the extreme at this point, and we can bring up examples, as you said, the gay hypnotism and the rest on the anti-gay fringe on the right and the anti-choice fringe on the right. They're similar groups. They cross-pollinate a lot. The people who are supporting this Gun Appreciation Day coming up, which just happens to be an inauguration day, by the way, no connection there. It's a known, they're white supremacists who are the ones who are supporting this.
And we should say, and I want to say too about, I had played this ad, the ad about President Obama is an elitist because his kids are protected by guns. That also, we should be very clear about that. That whole elitism charge is as old as the sort of the right. I mean, that it emanates out of that Southern strategy, this notion of the elites coming down to tell us how we're supposed to treat our people, the elites
right,
coming
said,
down
coming
to tell
to
us how we're supposed
away.
To run our state, and forgive the pun, pulling the same triggers there.
You made the point earlier. You said it exactly right. They're coming to take our stuff away, which originally started out as slaves.
Right.
Then it became about other things that they're coming to take away. But you're right. I mean, it's a basic based in Southern culture. There's obviously some other states that you wouldn't necessarily call the South that have some of the same culture in them. But that's sort of where it's based. And again, if you go through just quickly once more refer to the history of this, the thing that's changed is that these guys ginned up these issues. They used them again and again and again in pornography in your textbooks. And West Virginia was a big thing. And what's her name? Bryant down in Florida with the anti-gay activism in the 80s. And I mean, they spent Anita Bryant, right? They spent so much energy and time doing this because back then, sadly, we were on the wrong side of those issues, even though at that time I was quite young. But people who thought like us the problem was we were too far ahead of the pack. So they knew that they could split things up in this country, and what you'd have is you'd kind of have New York and California, or not even at that point, California was still pretty conservative then, but maybe New York and Massachusetts and a few places on one side and the rest of the country on the other side. A few 50 congressional districts maybe on one side, the rest of them on the other side. The problem for them now is that's completely flipped.
Yes.
Now, New York and California and all those places, they may be leading and they may be more progressive than most states, but most of the states out there are, you know, are when it comes to their beliefs on choice and guns and gay rights, are with those states. Now the fringe outliers are your Mississippis, where the governor stood up the other day and said that he used the word nullify presidential gun laws. I wonder if he knows the history of that word. Maybe he's doing it on purpose, or maybe he's just being the most ironic person in history. So you've got like a couple states now, and please, you know, for anybody listening, let me be clear, there are a lot of fantastic people. Even in those states, you get 30%, 35%, sometimes 40%, 45% voting for President Obama. So I'm not trying to say everyone and to make that generalization, but more of a majority, let's say. And those states and those congressional districts, and the only reason why there's enough congressional districts right now is because they've so gerrymandered everything. Yep. I live in a state here in Ohio where before 2010 there were 13 Democrats and 5 Republicans, and now it's basically the opposite. When you have fair electoral districts, even in a state like Ohio, the majority here would be Democrats. The majority in Pennsylvania by a good amount. The majority in Wisconsin. The majority or at least 50-50 in Florida. So you have to understand that the vast majority of the congressional districts they're on the wrong side of these issues too. But so now they want to beg you to stop talking about them. Oh, remember that stuff we brought up 40 years ago? Yeah, you know.
The problem is, you know, again, and we've said this many times relative to many issues, they created the Frankenstein, and now Frankenstein is now running through the streets, and they can't control it. And so they are locked into this position and cannot move from it. And, we just have a couple of minutes here because I want to touch on how this impacts other issues. Credit to where it's due. President Obama, at the very least, may be slightly behind the curve, but he's just right behind it enough. I mean, this is what leading from behind looks like. And you know, I'm not saying that in a pejorative sense. I mean, it is he has waited for the moment where he thinks he can win this fight, and he has taken up the banner. And good for him. I mean, I don't know how many of these policies are going to make it through Congress. From your perspective, quickly, because I want to transition into talk a little bit about the debt and the GOP right now, their other cultural issue of being you need to cut government, although we can't really tell you exactly what we should cut. They're meeting in a former plantation right now in Virginia. They're meeting in a former plantation right now in Virginia. Talking, doing a little soul searching.
They summoned the ghosts of Strom Thurmond and Jefferson Davis to advise them on policy.
Yes, but just from the 23 executive actions that President Obama signed, not into law, last week, what were the ones that stood out for you as being having the most potential impact?
Well, the ones that deal with information are key, because saying that the CDC has to do these firearm studies, saying that that the information needs to be shared and not destroyed between federal agencies. I mean, can you imagine if we did that when there were terrorist attacks and just said the information can't be shared? Mm. And that's what they've done. And a lot of these attacks and things could potentially be prevented if the FBI, the ATF, and other groups were communicating with each other, which what the NRA has done as much as they can to pass, you know, these TIHART amendments that create barriers and make information destroyed. So the ones dealing with that and updating the database of people who shouldn't be able to get weapons, those are hugely important in terms of prevention. And also, of course, it's standing up and saying that he would make a recess appointment to run for someone the ATF, because that's been a big problem. I mean, right. Can you imagine if there had been no Secretary of Defense since 2007, no Secretary of the Treasury?
Right.
I mean, I don't think most people can imagine. There's been nobody running the ATF in a full-time capacity. Because guys like an
attorney general from Minnesota or something, right? I mean, is he flying in two days a week to Washington?
It's a part-time job, you know, to stop 31,000 gun deaths a year, you know? And I mean, and so, yeah, that's been a major problem. is because they blocked this because they don't want anybody there because they're just as happy to have guns sold illegally. That's who they are. They want to make money. We've been through that a million times. So those are all really, really important. So, yeah, I think those will contribute. We need a lot more. If I had to look at the legislation right now, I would say a federal trafficking law, the fact that we don't even have that is ridiculous, that these states handle straw purchases. You know, you buy guns for people you know couldn't get them. You know, that we don't really have a strong federal law on that and background checks. I think that that stuff's almost definitively going to pass because I don't see how they can stop that from passing. The tougher stuff is going to be the assault weapons ban and the high-capacity magazines because, it's not a secret. That's also where the gun manufacturers make a lot of their money.
All right,
and they're going to fight that tooth and nail.
With that said, let's just turn.
But don't get me wrong. I'm not being negative. I think it's got a great shot at passing because I think there already are even some Republicans, Peter King, Charlie Dent, others who have come out, Mark Warner, Bob Casey and others, on the Democratic side who formerly have had A ratings and such from the NRA who've said that something has to be done.
Hey, let me quote the UPS guy who dropped off the package here this morning on gun control. He said anything that improves the status quo is good. I mean, anything that improves the status quo is good.
Yeah.
I mean, we're moving in the right direction. At least there's some movement. And even if it's just rhetorical, even if there's just an understanding that the NRA is a trade organization, no different than the Chamber of Commerce. But certainly worse. I mean, in terms of the dynamic anyways, they're there to sell weapons.
But I just think that the fact that that's now become an understanding, you still have dead enders. You're going to always have those ones on the right. But I'm so glad now that so many more people, because, I used to get some people on the left who would start this argument with me. It's in the Bill of Rights and everyone has a right. Without really understanding what that Second Amendment was about, I would recommend everybody read Pauline Mayer, the historian who could explain it to you better than Antonin Scalia, for example. But even Antonin Scalia, in his decision, allowed for all sorts of regulations. Looking at our history, where we did. We actually mostly had concealed carry banned in this country. And so I think that this conversation, this is what I've always talked about, and I don't, the importance of culture in politics, that when a culture changes, when people start looking at things differently, when the culture changed around drunk driving is when the laws came, especially when you're dealing with public health issues. Same thing with smoking, secondhand smoking around kids. And that we're having these conversations that people like Bob Costas and Joe Scarborough and others who weren't considered to be Piers Morgan, to be particularly political on the issue of guns are now coming out, and David Frum and there's many others. It changes people's minds. It actually educates people because they learn and they realize, wait a minute, this isn't about hunters. This isn't about protecting yourself in your house with your handgun. That actually, Justice Scalia has now said, unless that's overturned at some point, that's your constitutional right. But needing to buy a military-style weapon that with a drum that contains 100 bullets in it, I mean, and not having a background check when someone can go in and buy a 50-caliber rifle that can take down some aircraft? I mean, are you kidding me? And I think a lot of people, as I was saying before, thought we had background checks for all this stuff.
Yeah.
So as they learn and as people are being more exposed, there's people, great people. I'm sure you've had probably David Waldman, Cagro X, on your show before. He's just been going on this spree on Twitter, and he's got a lot of followers on Twitter for his contributions to Daily Coast and other places, where he's been writing about all these accidental shootings and all these places where would an armed guard have helped here?
There's a story this week coming out of LaPierre County in Michigan. A school I guess it was a week or two ago, made this big announcement of hiring a former sheriff, a gun safety expert, a firearms expert, to function as their school guard. He accidentally left his handgun in the kid's bathroom.
Right.
This stuff happens. That's the point.
And you know what?
It's not like
that wouldn't have been reported 6 months ago. Right. I promise you. In Michigan, it might have been, but it wouldn't have been national news. But now, because we're talking about this issue,
right.
Now because people, and that is what brings about change. It's educating people because I still believe most of the people in this country are good people. Right. And have common sense. And when they learn, about the facts, not what they're hearing just from the NRA and Fox News and Rush Limbaugh, but when they hear about the actual facts out there, they make informed decisions. It may take us a while, but usually in our history, we've eventually gotten it right. you know? And so that is the value of all of this, of the rhetoric changing, of the president using the bully pulpit, of reporters reporting on stories like the one you just brought up that never would have been mentioned before.
Right.
People start realizing it is dangerous beyond just the mass shootings or whatever. Leaving a gun around your house, not locked up somewhere, even if there aren't kids there, is crazy. You will be more likely to have someone else shoot you with it. But with kids in your house is insane. And the more people we reach, you know, to realize that, just like the people you reach to say to themselves, huh, maybe I'm too drunk to get in the car and drive.
Right.
Means fewer people will get killed. I mean, you know, a side effect of what Australia did after the Port Arthur massacre in 1996, a side benefit of all they did to prevent these homicides, is suicides have gone down 59%, according to a Harvard study, because when you use a gun, you're 90% likely to be successful in killing yourself. Whereas when you use most other methods, you actually – it's almost just the opposite. You fail something like 80 or 90% of the time. So, you know, these are all things that contribute. And that's what, you know, we look at this not as a left-right issue. I mean, I laugh when people like S.E. Cupp and others, well, we shouldn't politicize this and demonize. That's what they've been doing for 40 years. I look at this issue the way I look at drunk driving or smoking or anything else. I look at this as a public health issue. How do we save more people and have fewer people die and have a better society? And when you look at it that way, the answers are pretty clear. And I think more people are learning about that. So,
well, let's just take a minute. We don't have much time here, but I want to just take a minute because we got just what's happening in terms of the upcoming. Well, I don't think there's going to be a debt ceiling fight after all, it appears now. But we've got the Republicans on their trust retreat at a former plantation. They're being taught not to use the word rape in their campaigns.
Rape is apparently a four-letter word, I saw.
Yes,
I mean,
that is what
it was. Something, you know, rape.
Washington Post has basically said rape not the best thing for you to talk about when you're trying to get people to vote for you because apparently they can't control themselves.
You know, it reminds me of like an episode of Seinfeld with George Costanza. You know, right. Engaged. It's just something you say.
Right.
Engaged.
Right.
You know, that's rape. Rape. It's just something you say. I mean, you know. It's amazing, but okay, go ahead. Sorry.
So they're also – the other thing they're doing some soul searching about is this whole issue of their daddies now telling them, okay, you've been playing around with the debt ceiling, and now that is genuinely dangerous, and you cannot vote to default. And it remains to be seen if they're going to be able to control their caucus in this regard, but it is it is increasingly being taken off the table. And what I'm not seeing a lot about here is the fight about the sequestration that's going to take place in March. Now, it seems to me that this is going to open up the opportunity for them to kick that can down the road too now. If it's not tied in, the reason why they had kicked the can of the sequestration from January 1st to March 1st was because there was a sense that the Republicans wanted the leverage of the debt ceiling fight to be tied in, and they wanted this all to be sort of conflated in some way so that they could get across some draconian cuts to our social insurance programs, which, of course, would be far more insidious because they would happen maybe 10, 15 years down the road, essentially, and just begin an assault on these programs. Give me your sense, we just got a minute here, of what do you think is going to happen now with this debt ceiling and with this sequestration fight?
Well, you know, I've learned from the past predicting definitively what's going to happen with these things is not easy. But at least what it seems like at this point, we will give credit where credit's due so far. It seems like in general, President Obama is taking a more confrontational tone and stance, realizing the power of the bully pulpit and his email list and the people behind him, and realizing that these are people that are emotion-based and are people you can't deal with. And that doesn't mean all Republicans. My guess is there's a 20-30 in their caucus you might be able to, maybe a little more. But overall, so I think, you know, whatever they're saying to each other on the old plantation down there – okay, I won't even make any jokes. I'll just get myself in trouble. But, you know, whatever they're going through, you know, I think in a way it's more just the irrelevance and the crazy rump of this party that we're talking about. I think in the end, you know, Boehner and the guys who understand the business community are going to step in. because they're bluffing, and President Obama, hopefully, and it seems that way so far, and I'm hoping, as I said, realizes this, and maybe that he's talking to some of those same Wall Street people, which has chagrined us in the past, but let's just be honest here, that John Boehner is talking to and saying, you know, you'd better knock the Republicans in line, because otherwise this thing is it's going to be bad. And I think now that Boehner and these guys are explaining how bad this would be for them, that they will mostly be blamed by 2 to 3 to 1 margins in any poll you look at, it will make them come to the table. I mean, I just think it would be so important to just say, you know what, we're not doing anything. Yep. Oh, but you know, if you want to bulk negotiate for Medicare prescription drugs, we'll do that. And if you want to cut defense a little bit, we'll do that. And you want to cut some subsidies for corporations, we'll do that. Otherwise, get bent. That's what I'm hoping for. I don't expect that kind of language, but which would be fun. If I ever heard President Obama say "get bent," then I would become an Obama bot immediately and forever. But I think
Cliff Schechter revealed.
I'm sorry.
Cliff Schechter revealed.
That's what it takes, man, for love for me. That's love. I just think overall we're in a good place right now, where these guys have been taking it on the chin one time after another, and the business community still runs that party. And so in this case, as you are sometimes, you know, when it comes to things in the past, like I can think of stem cells and other things, where it's been when it's a good thing that you're lined up with the business community because they actually happen to be in the right place on something, I think in this particular issue it's going to be to our benefit too.
All right, folks. Cliff Schechter, thanks so much for joining us, Cliff. We will talk to you next week. Always a pleasure.
Always my pleasure, my friend. Take care.
All right. Cliff Schechter, everybody. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, what did you want to do?
I was going to say I have a feeling that while they're down there at that plantation, the Republicans are currently going through classes, that if they go to see Django Unchained, do not audibly cheer for Leonardo DiCaprio's character during the movie. That'd be very
bad.
That
is a long way to go to that, buddy. You're just doing a spoiler alert.
I'm segueing into
the film. Yeah, well done. Okay, there you go.
That was a good joke.
There you go. Now, you got to speak up a little louder. I got an email before we go to Isabel. I got an email this morning from a listener, R. Sam, I have learned much from your show over the last 6 months. Today, I've changed gears to listen to Pac-Man. One reason. Your audio output sucks. It's like your team is talking underwater. Anyway, good luck. And that was... So you gotta talk like you're talking above water or something.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
I gotta say, I had a little fun.
Find our competitors.
I did write back. Thank you for this email. I should say, you know, look. We get criticism about our tech at times. We get but it's always helpful criticism.
We're a constant work in progress.
Exactly. So in this instance, and this is a guy who, you know, he's not paying for anything for the show. That's certainly, we make it available for free. But you know, if you're gonna offer some criticism, be a little bit helpful. None of that was helpful. So I wrote back. Thank you for this email. This is exciting for us. We've been working with a media analysis firm to specifically test out why people listen to political talk shows. Is it for the audio quality or the great guests and analysis? You must have been in the group who received subpar audio quality for the test. Sorry to lose you as a listener, but the data is invaluable to us. Thanks. And then he wrote back, can I say your response is I don't know why I'm doing it in a British accent. But he's clearly now he realizes maybe sucks was not. I want to sound a little more highfalutin.
I want to elevate this discourse.
Can I say your response is less than satisfying? It creates aggravation. Of course, show quality is number one. However, simple obstacles like quality production should not pain the listener. By your response, I realize this is a sore spot for you, a grain of salt in the wound. Lastly, you are in the, quote, media business, correct? And then I couldn't help myself. He got me with that one. Boom.
You got to admit that was pretty good.
So I responded, if my response aggravated you, then I would say that it's more than satisfying. Good day, and I wish you luck in your search for audio output that is less sucky. And he goes, and then he writes back, no, I don't mean your response creates aggravation for me. I mean, although he did say, let me go back, your response is less than satisfying. It creates aggravation. So maybe he's changed a little bit. I mean, it creates aggravation for your sense of balance.
What are you talking about?
Anyway, the idea is this. The Stitcher broadcast of your show is solid. Your website delivery of the same broadcasts are not. Your lack of professionalism is, however, quite amusing and possibly a reflection of some internal issues you have with your mother. Now, first off, let me explain something to you. The Stitcher broadcast comes from our podcast. There is no way their audio could be better than ours. What I would suggest is perhaps your connection to the internet on your computer sucks. Because it is impossible for it to be better. Unless, right? I mean, I don't see how it would be possible.
It's the exact same.
So this is the Stitcher broadcast right now. Now back to our website.
What do you say about sound quality?
All right. All right, let's take a break.
We have Isabel.
What's that?
Isabel.
Yeah, we're going to go. We're going to call Isabel Gillies. We're already late. She's going to be pissed. All right, we'll be right back. We are back on the Majority Report. Sam Cedar on the phone. We have Isabel Gillies. But before we bring her in, let's play her theme song. And note, we're going to be using our alt theme song today, not the Jimmy Reefer Cake song, of, with all due respect to Jimmy, because last week we had Chris Rosen on, and we thought this one might be more appropriate.
It's new?
What's that?
It's a new one?
Well, no, but it's an old one. It's just not the one that we generally use.
Oh, got it.
All right. Well, you shouldn't jump in like that until I reintroduce you.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. There we go.
The beautiful Isabel Gillies is going to take us to the movies. She'll tell Sam what's good on the street.
There you go.
Wait a minute. I love that. I've never heard that.
Oh, yes, you have. You've heard that one.
No, sir.
No, you've heard that one, but we felt that it was almost like, the F.U. Rosen at the end sort of brings it back, but it was just almost
too
laudatory for you, and I was a little bit concerned for your safety.
It was a little negative.
No, it wasn't. No, not that. No, the negative part I loved. I just thought it was like, you know, getting a little bit too fanboyish.
Oh, but I like the tune.
Yeah, no,
the tune. It kind of reminds me of the Partridge Family.
Ah, interesting. Yes, I could see that if you sped it up. Now, the guys in my office right now are looking at each other going, the what? The Partridge
Family? Oh,
no. No. These guys...
Come along with the song that we're singing. Oh, David Cassidy, man. No one. Did someone just say, who is Dude Cassidy?
No, we got a comment from a listener that our audio output sucks and that it sounds like
underwater. I know.
Yeah. Oh, you were listening.
I heard that, but I gotta say that it's going a little in and out. I can't hear you.
Yeah, you know what? That's a problem with your on. I don't know why that's the case. We can hear you fine. You should be able to hear me only moderately fine. It should be better today because we upped our internet connection. I don't know, but we can hear you fine.
It sounds a little internet scarce.
Yeah, we may be a little internet scarce. Isabel, how are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Did you watch Win Win?
You know what? I'll tell you something. Last night, fill people in who didn't listen to the last live broadcast of the show last year, I had you and Matthew Film Guy on for a steel cage match.
Throwdown.
Where you would recommend a film and he would recommend a film, and then I would reconvene and have you both back on to talk about which one was better. Now, you, Matthew, suggested, I think it was A Kid with a Bike, is it called?
French film.
A French film with a lot of social import, and he spoke eloquently about the mise-en-scene, and et cetera, et cetera, which I think are both French words.
I took you to the great land of New Jersey with Win-Win.
And then you said Win-Win. And so last night, sat down, and I told Nikki, I got to watch this movie because Isabel's coming on tomorrow. And the thing was for $15. It's not rentable yet. It was $15 on my Apple TV and on Amazon streaming. But, I got a special dispensation, a one-time off, where I could actually pay for it. Now, that's a lot of money to pay for a movie, but obviously that's how much you're going to spend for almost one ticket if you go out, and then the babysitter and this and that, so we did it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not going to tell you what we thought.
What?
Well, I'll say I'm going to say...
How on earth is that true that you're not going to tell me?
Well, because
you're waiting?
I feel like we should have Matthew here for the verdict. I mean...
Oh, my goodness, because I've sort of been waiting to see.
Waiting to see?
Did
well,
you watch his bicycle movie?
No, not yet. That's why. I don't think it's fair to make a judgment yet. And so I'll have you both back on, you know, probably in like 3 or 4 weeks, because it's going to take me 3 or 4 weeks to watch Matthew's movie, because they're much more dense.
Oh, that was a little commentary.
No, I'm just saying.
You just said a little something by
no,
that.
No. I'm trying to keep maintaining suspense.
Well, you might, you know, it's true if you keep falling asleep during the movie that it might take you 3 or 4 weeks.
Whoa, this is the showdown. It is on, ladies and gentlemen.
Donkey Kong.
It is on.
I want to win.
All right. Well, so now... What do you have for us this week?
Well, okay. You know how I like to do theme things.
Theme things?
Well, you know, if it's an election, you know, well, here comes the inauguration. I should have thought of that.
Right.
But anyway, so I did see one thing that is that's for Myla that you might enjoy too.
Well, I got to tell you, Myla has a very, very narrow spectrum of movies she will watch. She basically will only watch either Singing in the Rain, Ships Ahoy.
I tried to get Sam to have her watch The Land Before Time.
No.
Or American Tale with Feifel. Two American classic children's movies, and she wouldn't watch it.
She won't watch anything. I'm telling you. She will only watch Gene Kelly movies.
Ready
now,
for
the,
this one?
No, hold on.
She'll watch this one.
Let me tell you this story first. Hold on. We actually almost forced her to watch E.T. with us because we wanted to try and expand.
She's too young for that.
Really?
I don't think I've ever cried as hard as when I watched E.T.
She cried. She cried big time. She cried big time. She doesn't like things that are sad or scary. So,
I know, and E.T. is both, so good job.
Well, yeah, we blew it. But
E.T., I saw in the movie theater with my brother, and we both cried so hard. I think I was 10.
Yeah, I think I actually choked up a little bit just because she was choking up. But all right, yeah. But let's see what you got. I mean,
So this is for Myla, and then I'll move over because my my son got choked up in a movie that I think you might have the screener for.
Okay.
You're an actor,
oh yeah, we should say this that. 2 weeks ago, David Cross came on and was getting a little bit hoity-toity about the SAG screeners he got. And I'm a member of SAG. I should have gotten them. I found out that I actually did. I just didn't pay attention to the...
So Sam himself is hoity-toity as well.
Yeah. So I've hoity-toitied it up.
Oh, he is.
Go ahead.
Well, so this is sort of like an octopus review because there's so many different tentacles to it.
We've had the author of the octopus on here, Guy Lawson. Many times.
Okay. Ready?
That's
for
Isabel's
Myla,
laugh when
and
she doesn't
you guys
know what you're talking
watch
about.
At the same time, because I enjoyed it very much. And it's new on Netflix. This is what drew my attention to it. Never Say Never. Justin Bieber.
Are you joking?
No, I am
Oh,
not.
Never Say Never, Justin Bieber?
Justin Bieber.
The Bieber fever has passed.
It doesn't matter because it is so cool to see this kid who's 3 years old just being a genius on the drums. He's just and then you go through his whole, you know, how he became a professional at a young age, and it's really interesting, and kids really love it, and it's better than the Katy Perry one. Oh. Although I like that too, but the Justin Bieber one's really good.
All right,
I'm
I mean,
kidding.
I don't want to dwell
He'll
on this
love
because
it,
I don't
and it
know.
Will teach her about you know trying hard. He really works hard, and he's.
No, he seems like a good kid. He seems
I think
like
he's
a good
kid, and it's interesting. And I loved, I saw it in the theaters with our kids, and then
did you cry?
I just saw that it's available on, oh, I totally cried.
Oh, his politics aren't,
you know why?
Aren't very good. I've just
No, because it's more effort. I cry when someone does a big effort on something. Like I cry when I read our joint school has an auction.
Yep.
And they come out with this big catalog of all the stuff in it, and I got it, and I started to read it, and I cried. Because it just moved me that people work so hard on things.
Wow, I don't even know if I saw that book. Isabel and our kids go to the same
school.
I didn't realize.
Yeah, the auction, man, you got to bid on stuff.
Yeah,
you should actually give something to the auction.
No.
What could you give?
No, we give. I'll give DVDs.
Maybe someone could go on the Majority Report.
Yeah. Well, let's not go too far down the road on this one.
Okay, so that's my Myla family time recommendation.
Okay, yeah, I don't know if that's going to be family time. That may be just Myla time.
But what your time with Myla?
That may be like it's 8 o'clock in the morning and on a weekend, and we're like, go watch.
And you put on
Bieber Fever, whatever it is.
Yeah, Never Say Never.
Right.
Never Say Never. Yeah. Okay. So then I'll move on to you and Nikki.
Okay.
And I'm gonna say if you have it, but see, I have a big obsession, and it's not a movie, but it's something that's playing this weekend, and I really want everybody to watch. So I'm going to say that that's my real recommendation. But I'll say that also maybe if you got it, you should see Les Mis.
Les Mis?
Yeah.
Boy, Michael just put
I
his
really
hand
liked
in
it.
His hand. You know
Are
who would like Les Mis?
Faces?
I think Myla actually would like Les Mis.
No, it's a I took the kids. It's a little bit, there's the prostitution and...
Well,
that's
we expose Myla to all of that.
It's very good. I loved it. I saw it on Christmas.
All right, this prostitution. What I've never seen it.
The French Revolution.
I've never heard of that.
Perhaps would interest you. There was a big political thing going on.
Myla gets very upset about the French Revolution because she was she was on the side of the aristocracy.
Maybe, maybe it's you know what I listened to a lot about yesterday? Molly.
Molly. What is that? Wait. Why Michael's just going, just like sitting there? He's got his own show that he's doing simultaneously in the corner there. Yes. What is Molly?
What did he say?
Molly's
well,
a country
me,
and an important
Molly
thing.
Oh, Molly.
Happening.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought the same as Sam.
I thought,
like, who's Molly?
What is the matter with you two?
Well, I thought
in
she
Africa,
was saying
West Africa.
Okay.
Bad.
I gotcha. All right. Yes.
You don't expect Isabel coming on to talk about
this. Yeah, that's going to be... What? There's too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah, there's too many cooks in the kitchen. In other words, shut up, guys. Come on now.
So the French, you know, that's a very big thing for the French. Maybe that is theme. Good.
I don't know what's going on now. So wait
Why
a second.
Why do they think I'm funny? Did I say something smart?
No. It's I think
Never.
I got confused. I got confused about the... I thought it was Molly, like M-O-L-L-Y, and I thought you were saying like over the weekend, like her show is premiering, and I'm like, who's Molly? So okay.
No, I was just because I had a crazy free association brain.
Okay, wait a second. So you're recommending Les Mis because of what's going on in Algeria and Molly? Is that am I getting this right?
Well, it was a free associative moment. Because I listened to so much about it yesterday when I was in the car.
Okay. All right. So
that was a little crazy.
You heard about the hostage situation in Algeria and you thought Les Mis.
No, I just, because I was I did Les Mis and then we're talking about the French Revolution. That made me think of France and that made me think of Molly because they're all together over there, sort of. And they're going to have to get involved. And then I thought maybe it's a theme thing.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Drowning, and not just audio-wise. I'm drowning.
Yeah, something sounded bad. Are you moving your phone around or something? You know,
no.
I'll tell you something. I can tell you exactly what Matthew Film Guy is sitting is at home right now saying to his computer.
What?
He's saying,
"What?
You want to talk about something that is going on, and you're not going to talk about Battle for Algiers?" That's what he's saying. He is so mad right now. He is angry.
Why?
I don't know. I'm convinced of it.
At me?
No, I think he's just mad at his computer and probably at me.
Maybe he's just a madman.
He's a madman. Now, why? So Les Mis may or may not happen.
I don't know if you're going to like it. I wanted to recommend Argo. I wanted to recommend Silver. Actually, what did you think of Silver Lining Playback?
Why is your phone now breaking up a little bit on our end?
Well, you've been breaking up the whole time.
All right, let me call you right back. Hold on for a second.
You're going to call me back?
Yeah, hold on.
Do I hang up?
Yeah. Yeah, hang up. I'll call you right back. Bear with us, folks.
Is that better?
Say again?
Is that better?
I don't know.
Talk a little bit more.
So I'm obsessed with something else that I want to share with you.
I did watch Silver Lining Plan. Is that what it was?
Playbook.
Playback?
Yeah. I don't know. For some reason, it is a little bit still. You're breaking up a little bit. I thought it was good. I thought it was good. I thought Argo was interesting, but, you know,
I loved Argo.
The WB e-screener thing that I got, that I downloaded on. Was garbage. It was buffering every 30 seconds. It was driving me crazy.
Especially with Argo, you can't really have that.
No. Well, with anything that you're trying to watch, you can't have it. Of course, now, of course, we're validating everything that a guy wrote us on the email. But about the audio quality. But, Isabel, here's the question I really have for you.
Yes.
Okay? Because it's crunch time.
Yes. I have something else I want to say, but guess.
Are you on, like, some type of wireless phone or something?
No, I'm just on my normal phone. Should I call from my cell phone?
Yeah. Do you have the
number? Do you think our internet's messed up?
Yeah, I think your phone is messed up. That's what I think it is.
All right, hold on. Call me.
I'm going to call you on your cell phone. I'm going to call you on your cell phone.
Do you have that number?
Yeah.
Bye-bye. You're really taking that email about our audio quality to heart, aren't
you? Well, she honestly was breaking up quite a bit. We'll cut this part out for the podcast,
which by the way will also be on Stitcher, that same exact version.
This isn't funny anymore.
We're gonna go long for members today. This is not gonna be a freebie Friday. We're gonna go long for members.
Hi.
Oh wow. Now that sounds. It certainly sounds different.
Much better.
Yeah, it was obviously your phone. What do you think about that guy?
I know. Vindicated.
Okay. So here's the thing.
Except now it's, I have phone problems. It's, what a drag.
It's crunch time. I need a name for my yet-to-be-born son.
What was your great-grandfather's name?
My great-grandfather's name was...
Yeah.
Joseph, but that is unfortunately my father's name.
What about Nikki's great-grandfather?
Arthur.
I love Arthur.
I like that too, but she's not going for it.
Arthur Cedar's a great name.
I wanted I think I like it too, but she's not do you think
this is my favorite subject in the world?
Let me try out a couple. I'm not going to draw this out too much because I know a lot of people aren't going to find this entertaining in any way. But do you think that Shylock sounds too Jewish?
Yes.
Yeah. What about Shekel?
Listen, don't play a game with me. I like talking about names.
No, I'm not. I'm not playing a game with you. I'm just asking. So what else you got?
Okay. What about born in March? What about your mother's father's name?
Bernie. And that there's too many guys in my family with that name, too.
Everybody, what about her mother's father?
Her mother's father.
Or her father's father.
I don't know. Actually, that's a good question. I think Lewis is up there, and I'm a fan of Lewis. But then Nick's like, well, what are we gonna call him? Louis, and then she's like, but what about Louis C.K.? And I'm like, well, who cares about Louis C.K.?
Louis, yeah, no kidding. But hold on for a second. What's Nikki's? Did she take your name?
Did she take my name?
Your last name?
Yeah, I refer to her as Sam.
No, but is she Nikki Cedar?
No.
Oh.
No.
What's her middle name?
Kelly. That's
hello?
Not, that's, hello?
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me?
Now I can. I'm a big fan of family names, but I know Jews don't do that, but they can from long ago, right?
Yes. Yeah. Jews traditionally name somebody after somebody who's died, and... The I'm actually like leaning towards the name Saul is an uncle of mine, which I like.
I love Saul. I love Saul. I love Solomon.
Saul Cedar.
I love.
Yeah.
Saul is a great name. Saul Cedar. Oh yeah. You have to do double. Double is great.
Double.
Saul.
Saul Cedar.
Saul Cedar. SS.
No, you want something alliterative. You're saying. I agree.
Yeah. I love it.
I agree.
What about I love
that's
Solomon.
Why I was saying Shylock Cedar is pretty. It really rolls off the tongue.
What about Judah?
No, Judah Benjamin. Can't do that.
Oh, really?
Yep.
What about
I'm really pushing for Milo.
Milo, I
what
like.
What better name? You have right? Mila and Milo Cedar.
Milo and Milo. Yeah, that's not so great. Milo's a great name, though.
All right. Well, listen. Think about it.
I'll send you a list of about 100. But wait a minute. Can I just please say that it's the playoffs this weekend, and we can mess around with movies, but really, let's tune in to the football games.
There you go. I love it.
I'm obsessed.
Pats are going to win.
Oh, well, okay, but the Falcons are going to win.
Yeah, and then the Pats will beat them in the Super Bowl. I love it.
Doesn't matter. If the Falcons win, the Super Bowl party that I will have will be so enormous.
Really?
Yes.
Are you saying I will get invited?
Yeah.
How big's your TV?
Sure. Big.
Really?
It's big, yeah.
All right. Sold.
Can I tell you that I just discovered football?
You just
I'm
discovered
into it
football?
Now. I'm into it now, and there's a sort of marital slant to it, too.
All right, well, wait a second. Save this for next time you come on.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, hopefully the Falcons. Go Falcons.
All right. Good luck to you. I hope they win.
Good
so
luck
that
to
I
you
have,
and your audio, because it's a little messed up.
All right.
And listen, can we please go do the throwdown? Because I really want to know, it's, what, 3 or 4 weeks
yeah.
with Matthew?
It'll happen. We'll do it.
All right. And let's talk some politics, too, because I feel it.
All right. Great.
I want to talk about gun control.
Okay.
I'm hysterical.
I know. I understand. All right.
Okay.
I'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
I all you laugher hyenas.
Whoa! Bye-bye, Isabel. All right, folks, let's play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song of the week before we head into the better half. Let's hear it. What's this called?
Libertarian Paradise.
Libertarian Paradise. Let's hear it.
Progressives and libertarians actually agree. At least we know not to believe what we see on TV. We'd like to end the wars. We all want legal weed. But how much liberty do we really need? I think it would be cool. I think it would be nice to create my own libertarian paradise. Gardens full of marijuana and everyone is nice. I want to create my own libertarian paradise. Libertarians are like eagles, and I could never deny a bird of prey the right to spread its wings and fly. But one part of this paradise that I don't understand is a semi-automatic gun in every damn fool's hand. You gotta have some rules, and just a few would be nice to live in a safe and free libertarian paradise. Gardens full of marijuana, everyone is nice. I want to create my own libertarian paradise. I want a safe and free libertarian paradise.
I think we're causing some major conflict for Jimmy Reefer Cake. There's something definitely internally going on there.
Yeah.
Our libertarian calls just changing people left and right.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Interesting song. Really evokes that image of a lot of marijuana. Libertarian paradise. All right. All right, folks. If you can become a member of this program, not only does it provide this program with 99% of its or 98% of its revenue, we also use that money to upgrade our equipment. And so the best way for you to increase the quality of our audio output is to become a member today. We are developing our own app. And so for those of you who have a very bad connection on your computers, you'll be able to listen to the show on your app, hopefully within 6 to 8 weeks. Six to 8 weeks or so. And it'll be that much better. You can become a member today at majority.fm. Support the show by buying your crap through our Amazon link, justcoffee.coop, Fair Trade Coffee, 10% off. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Leave a good review on iTunes. Coming up in the better half of the program, we'll be talking about this story out of the Arctic where Shell may not be drilling much further. This horrible story about what's going on in Alabama and the as we get closer to the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Someone has been dishing on what it's like to sit in David Brooks's humility class in Yale. And, of course, telling tales out of school, those unpaid workers of Michelle Bachmann in Iowa are starting to drib-drab out of what was going on in the campaign. It is pretty amusing. And that and more in the better half of the program, 646-257-3920. You can IM us at Majority FM. We'll be back in just a moment.
We have a listener who recommended, why not, you know, sell the first name to an advertiser, maybe a Credo Cedar.
Yeah, I thought about that. Auction off the name. I'm not sure if Nikki would be down with that, but we'll see.